Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach. Usually I'm here with Laura. Our schedules are crazy lately. Each of us is traveling quite a bit, so we've been having to pivot. Every once in a while, we get interview requests. Sometimes they're from Vanity Fair or New York Times, and that's exciting. We like participating in those, but sometimes they come from unusual places, like today. I got an email a couple weeks ago from a high school student who was working on a paper about why marriages succeed and fail. And she asked me if I could answer some questions for her. I said, no problem. I'd be happy to answer some questions for you as long as you do it on the podcast. So my guest today is Sophia from New York. Sophia is working on this paper and has some questions about how therapy works, how couples work. She is delightful. I enjoyed talking to her. I got to ask her some questions about how high school works and how relationships work for young people. I have no concept of this, in part because, number one, when I was a teenager, there was no such thing as, say, texting or social media or, you know, all of this new stuff. The other thing is my kids didn't really date very much. Like they were kind of coming of dating age through COVID. And when it comes to their dating life, I know almost nothing. So Sophia gives me some insights into how all of that works. I'm delighted to have her. And as always, this is a very cool conversation. Stick around. Sophia, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. I understand that you you have a project that you're interested in, and I am interested in helping you with it, but I don't know too much about it. You want to tell us what it is?
Yeah. So basically, we had to pick a research question, and I chose why most marriages fail. And I didn't really have like a specific reason as to like why I picked it. It just like interests me. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we've been researching that for like the past 2 months, and I read the book Marriage Fail Point to like gain some more knowledge about my topic.
Okay.
And then we read a popular press article and stuff like that.
Right on. Tell me a little bit about who you are. You're Sophia and you're out of New York, but what else are you doing? Like, do you have brothers and sisters, mom and dad? What's going on?
Yeah, I have one brother, he's 7. And then I'm with my mom and my dad.
Okay. So you didn't, it sounds like you didn't pick this topic because you had experienced your own sense of a divorce or anything like that. You just kind of stumbled on it and said, hey, this is something I'm interested in today.
Yeah.
But you don't really know why.
Yeah.
That's fine. cool. What are you into? What do you do in your school? Are you, what kind of activities and stuff are you a part of?
So I play school volleyball and club volleyball, and then I play school golf.
Okay. That's pretty rad. I play Wordle golf. Do you play Wordle?
Yeah, I actually did it yesterday.
Yeah. I got a 1 yesterday.
You got
raise
it in
is
one?
My starting. Yeah. Raise is
really?
My starting word. Yeah.
That's so cool.
But I play Wordle golf. I play Wordle golf with 5 friends. And we play, 18 holes in a row. So we play 18 days in a row. Par is 4. So if you get a 3, that's a birdie. And if you get a 2, that's an eagle. And then you can get bogey, double bogey. If you crash, if you don't get it at all, you get a 7. And if you forget or fail to report your score, you get an 8.
I've never heard of that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So we play every single day. And at the end, somebody is the winner because they're the low score on the scorecard. And they get to be Tiger Woods. They get the title of Tiger Woods for the next 18 holes. And Tiger Woods is the boss. It makes all the rules, dictates all the, it's just a quirky little thing that we do. My daughter plays with us. She's 17. You're how old?
I'm 14.
14. I have a 17-year-old and a 21-year-old. So, but I'm really excited about what you're doing. I'm excited that you reached out to me and asked me to help you with your project. I'm excited to help you with your project. My 17-year-old is like 17 going on 35. So she's not all that interested in, you know, school, but, I want to know more. So you read this book. It's called The Marriage Fail Point.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it. What What'd you learn?
So, like the main things I learned is that like in relationship, you need to build each other up and like stay consistent because, it'll like help maintain like that honeymoon phase that like you feel in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the book made a really good point that your relationship is kind of like a puzzle and like you each contribute a piece to like the whole thing.
Okay.
Which I really liked that part. And then another main thing they talked about was like acting as a team, like we instead of me.
Okay.
And yeah.
All of that is really good advice. I'm happy to think out loud about any of that. But did he, who wrote the book?
Lee H. Balcom, I think.
Lee H. Balcom. Did he have any insight into what the fail point was?
Not really. He kind of talked about, like the main reasons of like why marriages fail, like infidelity and like if you can return to like how your marriage was before.
Okay.
The cheating.
Yeah. You said something that's actually, you suggested anyway that you wanted to know about why most marriages fail. Did you mean to say it like that? I don't know if that's actually accurate that most marriages fail.
Well, from my research, from the article I read, it said that like it was either 55% or 60% fail, and like the leading cause was infidelity.
Okay.
So that's what I read about.
Yeah. Those of us who are in the business, we don't actually think it's that high. I think there's part of what's really hard about measuring how many marriages fail is it's hard to know what you're measuring. Like, is it first marriages? And are they measuring divorce? Or like when they talk about people who were married and then they're not married, does the research include death, for example? Like, do marriages fail because someone dies? So when you said that, I was like, that's really interesting. When the number that I most often use is that about 40% of marriages end in divorce. It's a very popular statistic that it's 50%. So there's always this like, about half marriages fail. Your research suggests that a little bit higher. You can see that like sometimes depending on the research that you're considering, it could be a little bit lower. One thing that everybody seems to be really clear about, and it kind of speaks to your point, is that most marriages that end inside of 7 years, it's usually around year four. And, there's usually a toddler in the mix. So it's usually because people leave this honeymoon phase that you're describing and turned it into, and then real life kind of slams down on them, right? Like, I've got bills to pay and I've got an actual job and it's not all dates all the time. And now there's a kid and it wants all my attention. So, that's one just kind of interesting tweak on the research anyway, is that it really depends on who you're asking. But I think most of us really believe that toughest part is in that first 7 years, when children are very young and you've sort of moved past the honeymoon phase that you're describing. You had some questions though that you wanted to ask in with regard to your project.
Yeah. So, how do you handle a situation where like one person in the couple is resistant to the therapy that you give?
Yeah. Okay. So the couple has already come into therapy and one of them is there, maybe has kind of dragged their partner in, and the other one is kind of having a hard time or not really wanting to participate. That's your question?
Yeah.
And how do I handle the person who doesn't really want to participate?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's not, in my experience, it's not as, it doesn't happen as often as you think. By the time couples come into therapy, I think they're both there looking to solve a problem. And one of the first things that I do is I try to figure out what is the couple's shared agenda. So I want to know what all three of us are going to be able to work on. So sometimes, for example, the shared agenda is they're trying to decide whether or not to stay married. That's probably the situation that you're asking about, where there's somebody who's there and they really want to make the relationship work and the other person's just not really sure that they want to. So you have to find what is the thing that they both want to do. And again, if it starts with they both want to decide whether or not to stay married, it's a little bit of a different kind of therapy. It's almost discernment therapy. It's almost asking about, you know, whether or not it's even possible. If they do decide that they want to get married, but one of them is feeling like, you know, things are going better, then than not, right? They feel like, hey, I think we're doing pretty good. Maybe we don't have to work on as much as we do. What I generally try to leverage is that the unhappier partner has more influence. And what I mean when I say by that, when I say that is, if you've got two people who are, you know, working on the way I usually say it is, if you've got two people who are working on a business, they're in a business together, and one of them says, I don't really know if I want to do this business anymore. The one who does want to do the business, they have to find out about what does it mean? What is it going to take to keep the unhappier partner involved? Right. They have to find out, and they have to probably have to yield or do more to meet them where they are. So if you've got someone who's resistant to therapy because they think they're doing okay, but then the other unhappy partner is like, I don't think we're doing okay. I think we need to work. Part of what you have to do is help the person who's resistant understand that if they don't do the work, it's probably going to get worse. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like I said, I don't think it happens as often as you think, but when it does happen, you're really trying to get buy-in from the resistant partner through leverage and consequences is maybe the short version of that answer.
Okay, thank you. And then do you think that most of your couples come in because they're ready to divorce or because they want to maintain their marriage?
I think most couples come into couples therapy because they want to maintain their relationship. One thing I always say about my clients is that people are struggling. Everybody's struggling. Relationships are hard. It's hard to do it. The one thing that sets all my clients apart is that they're asking for help. And so by the time they come for a therapist, they're usually looking for help. They're rarely coming in because they already want to divorce or already want. I mean, at that point, they're probably calling a lawyer, or more likely they're talking to their best friend or they're talking to their own mom and saying, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. But if they're calling for a therapist, they're usually calling to get actual support.
Okay. And then how do you set goals for your couples?
How do I set goals for my couples? Well, like I said, I always want to find out what their agenda is. I want to find out what they are interested in. And, usually what I'll say is once we understand what that is, we have to figure out how to measure it. So I always start the second session exactly the same way. The second session, I say, how are you feeling, better, worse, or the same? And when they tell me they're feeling better, I go, how do you measure it? How do you know that you're feeling better? Like, what is it? Like if I asked you about your golf game and I said, how are you feeling about your golf game? Better, worse, or the same? You would be able to describe it to me certain things like, oh, my putting is getting a lot better. Or, oh, I'm driving it a lot harder off the tee. Or, oh, I figured out how to use, you know what I mean? Like you would have specific answers that would help us understand what it was. Or if I said, or how are you feeling worse? You're like, oh, I always get tired around the 13th hole and my swing starts to fall apart. You know, like if you can name very specific parts of what's better or worse, then we can start to set goals. And I never set goals for my clients. I always have them set their goals. And then I try to help them understand how to achieve them. There are some kind of standard templates that you can use to understand like how marriages work. I think I shared with you, John Gottman's research, Dr. Gottman's research. He's a guy who like literally said, this is how it works and this is how it doesn't work. And so minimally you want to give them a vision for how to do more of the things that work and how to do less of the things that don't work. But every relationship is unique. So I think it's important for them to set their own goals, to be honest.
Okay. And then how do you measure their progress and at what point do you like see them graduated from coming to you?
Yeah. I think, so the measuring the progress piece is the same as I just described in the sense that like, we want to find out how are they measuring better, right? Like how would you measure progress in your golf game?
Like slowly getting better.
Sure. Or your score is getting lower. Or like, again, you're driving harder, you're driving further off the tee, or you're making shots that you couldn't make before. You know, I think, again, part of what we need to do is figure out what are they measuring? And there's a moment in couples therapy that always happens that I'm really trying to pay close attention to. And it's this moment. The moment is when couples come in usually because they want their relationship to be less bad. And eventually in the process of therapy, they switch to wanting it to be more good. And so when they make that switch, that's the beginning of trying to understand how to graduate them. And typically the way my couples graduate is if they've been seeing me once a week, they'll start to come in once every other week. And then they'll start to come in, say, once a month, and then maybe once a quarter. And I generally recommend that when couples feel like they're ready to be done, that they put something on the calendar, even if it's a year out, 1 year out, 6 months out, doesn't really matter to me, but that they have an appointment with their therapist on the calendar. Because if they have if they don't have that appointment on their calendar, they won't call until they're in trouble. And so you really do want to let people know that, like kind of the work's never done. So like graduating doesn't mean you're all fixed. You finally achieved the best kind of marriage there ever was, but it's there that when they're doing more work, you know, on their own than you're doing for them, then they're ready and you kind of wean them out. But I also say that I think people ought to have a couples therapist the same way they ought to have a dentist or a mechanic or a financial advisor. You know, they ought to just have somebody that they can count on and rely on to help them get the help that they need.
Okay. Well, those were my questions. Thank you.
Okay.
Those are very helpful.
Right on. Well, is it okay if I ask you some questions?
Yeah.
Hey friends, it's me. Just as a reminder, we have our registration open. We'll be ending registration here pretty soon. For our spring 2024 weekend intensive. It's coming up on Friday, May 17th and Saturday, May 18th. You can register on our website at marriagetherapyradio.com. Scroll down a little bit and you'll see the link for our weekend intensive. If you have heard or been listening, we go through all 7 of the principles that Dr. Gottman identified are the principles for making marriage work. This is actually a program that I developed with the Gottman Institute. All the way back in 2011, I actually wrote the workbook for it. So I would love to walk you through all 7 of our principles, being able to start off with how to deepen your friendship, reconnect with one another, the skills necessary for being able to manage conflict that's inevitable in your relationship. And then we'll be capping it off with creating a vision for a future, something that's more purposeful and meaningful for that relationship for the long haul. Again, you can register. It's $450 for the two of you for our spring 2024 intensive on May 17th and May 18th. Look forward to meeting you.
Like I said, I have 2 daughters. They're 17 and 21. And I never quite know, they don't talk to me. They do. I mean, they talk to me, but I don't know if you're still talking to your parents, but it's hard for me to learn stuff. So I was like, I'm going to ask Sophia to tell me about things that I don't know about. So I want to tell me, okay. So tell me, first of all, tell me, what is it like, what are relationships like in what grade are you? 9th grade?
Yeah.
Do you have relationships in 9th grade? Do people date each other? Do they go together? Is it a big group thing? Like, how are teenagers doing relationship in 2024?
So basically, it starts out like they start talking for a little bit, like it could range anywhere from like 2 weeks to like 3 months. And then they decide that they want to take it to the next step and they start dating and they'd already
What's
been
that
hanging
called?
Out.
Did they have What's a name for it?
Dating? What do you mean?
Well, like when I was in 9th grade, if I wanted to be somebody's boyfriend, I would say, would you go with me? And all of a sudden we were going together. And that was the label that we had on it. But like, what's the label now?
Well, I mean, it's like different. You could, it kind of depends how you're asking them. So you could like text them and be like, do you want to be my girlfriend or boyfriend? Or you can like you could do it in person and make like a poster.
Okay.
And like say like, the same thing, basically.
Okay. And then you're just boyfriend and girlfriend, and that's what you are now.
Yeah.
Right on. Do you think that what are the hardest parts? Like, what are the challenges that you have as a teenager trying to figure out how to do relationships in 2024? What do we as adults need to understand?
Well, I feel like it's the same for like every kind of relationship. How it's like not going to be perfect all the time, and like. You need to understand like when they're struggling in their relationship and be like, I don't know. I'm trying to think.
That's okay. Take your time.
And also another thing, hanging out like at a younger age is like difficult because like me, I don't have a car, I don't have my license. So you have to kind of depend on your parents to like work with like their time schedule and your time schedule to like see each other.
Yeah. So there's like just practical limitations.
Yeah.
Do you think that there are, well, I know that there are, I wonder if you think that there are misconceptions that adults have about relationships for teens right now? Like, is there things that we think we understand that we don't understand?
Not really. Like what do you think are misconceptions that like,
well, I don't know,
you
man.
Have like, or like ideas
that's
that you
a,
have?
Okay. Thank you for asking me. That's a good one. I feel like, again, when I was growing up, and this was before social media, there was no texting, there was no, you know, it was just like you kind of did things like a really traditional way. And so you met somebody and you decided to take them out. And at that point, you were pretty exclusive with them right away. And there were pretty clear boundaries. And, you know, you just sort of did things that were kind of one-on-one-y. And it feels to me like my kids are more in like super fluid relationships, and you kind of can't tell what the real boundaries are, or what it is that they're like, who's like an actual like romantic interest, and who's just a really good friend, and how they do that. So I don't know. I feel like the rules are different, and I'm just wondering if you have any insight into how it works.
Yeah. So I think one misconception, or like something that adults don't understand, is that when you're in the talking stage, like before dating, you don't know if the other person is like talking to just you or other people as well. Mm-hmm. And that's like the difficult part, because you don't know.
You don't really know. And how much of it is subject to like what I was saying, social media, or, you know, is talking actual talking, or are you only texting? Is there like, I feel like there's not a lot of actual talking. And oh, I have a sub question about that, but tell me about how say social media plays a part. Cause of course I never dated in any age that had anything that was even kind of close to social media.
So it does play, a big part. Like talking through Snapchat is like a big thing for my age group. Mm-hmm. And I guess like Instagram as well.
Okay.
But it's not as common as talking through Snapchat.
But then you also have like there's the talking parts of that, but there's also just the maybe the comparison parts and the knowing if your friends are hanging out with other people, or I don't know. I feel like my kids, one of them anyway, is always upset that, hey, this event happened and that person was there, but this person wasn't there. And why wasn't I there? And it seems like it's a really different landscape in terms of trying to understand what the actual boundaries are. Maybe you can help me with this. Talk to me about Riz. What is Riz?
So it's like shortened for like charisma, like when you have you attract people basically.
Is it good to have Riz?
Yeah.
Okay. And is there how do you use this word? Do you say that person has Riz, or that person is risen, or that person is how does it work?
I mean, you could use both of them. Like if there's like a boy and then there's like a bunch of girls next to them, you could say like, oh, he's rising.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm interested. There's other slang I want to ask about. Like my daughter says period a lot. I never know what she means. Do you know what this word is? She's like, yeah. Period.
It just like, it's like an accomplishment basically. Like, oh, I walked the dog, period. Like you did that.
It.
Yeah.
Like give me. Okay. And then she says, low key. Is there, what is low key, and is there high key? What is high key?
I mean, they're like the same thing.
Okay.
It, you just say like, oh, I low key want to go eat. Like, it's just like what you want to do.
Okay. Sophia, do you call your parents bruh?
Yeah, I do.
should I be offended if she calls me bruh?
I mean, no, because it's just like, it's acclimated into our vocabulary. Like, it's not like we don't mean to say it; it just comes out.
Because it's not an insult. It's like a term of endearment.
Yeah, it's like friend. It can mean anything.
Okay. And then how about this one? It's giving. What does that mean?
Like, it's like you could use like two different words for that. Like, it's eating. It's slaying. Like, it's just like. I don't know.
No, but like, why would you say, like, when would you say it's giving?
Like, if I showed my friend, like, my outfit, they would be like, oh, that's giving. Like, it looks good.
Okay. I feel like she always says, like, it's giving, you know, Avatar vibes, or it's giving a horror movie, or it's giving, but you're using it in, like, it's a really positive thing. Like, it's, what did you say? It's slang or something else?
It's slang. It's eating.
Okay. Is there anything, what else should I know? Anything else? I'm just trying to vibe with the kids these days.
I'm trying to think. I mean, you've like said like all the main ones.
All right, good. Those are the ones that I hear the most. So I was just making sure I'm on track. I think I was most worried about bruh because I can't tell if she's trying to be mean to me or not.
No.
Tell me this. What is the deal with the Stanley Cup?
Well, I actually have two. I really like mine though, because it keeps it really cold. Like I could go to sleep and I'll still be cold. But the thing is, it like, if you drop it, it's going to all spill out. And that's like the negative thing about it. But I don't really know how it became popular. I think it was just a thing through TikTok and like everyone thought it was cute.
Right on. What's next? What's after the Stanley Cup? Do you have any idea?
Well, people are using like these cups called Owala. And like when you, there's like the cap and when you drink it, it looks like a koala. I've seen those like a lot now.
So that's the new fad cup. But are there other fads that we ought to be aware of that are coming down the pike through TikTok or something?
I'm trying to think. Like the company White Fox, like everyone loves that.
Okay. What's that?
They sell like comfy, like matching like sets, like sweatshirts, sweatpants, and like shorts and stuff.
All right.
And I think
they're on the lookout.
Yeah, I think they're based out of like Australia.
Okay. Well, like I said, you're coming in, like you're a few years behind my kid. My kid is a few years ahead of herself. So she's like 17 going on 35, but I'll try and find, some fads to connect with her. I got one more question for you. This actually is a question that I got from somebody who sent me an email. I get emails all the time, from people who either want to ask me a question or who want to see clients or who just are trying to figure out how to do something. I got this one from a kid. His name is Jonas. And he sent me this email in the middle of the night and it was titled Girlfriend. Okay. And I want to see what thoughts you have. Are you ready?
Okay.
Here's the email. I'm 15 years old and I really want a girlfriend. Do you know any pretty girls with blonde hair or brown hair that are 13, 14, 15, or 16? Or do you have any advice on how to get one? And then he said, thank you. So Sophia, do you have any advice for Jonas on how to get a girlfriend?
Just like make sure you're nice to them and like give them a lot of attention, obviously, because like girls like that. I don't know. I think those are like the main things.
Be nice and pay attention. That's the two main things.
Yeah, like give them attention, like talk to them a lot and like walk them to class if you go to school with them. And like make sure that you like don't change yourself when you're around like other people. I think that's a good one that all my friends talk about.
Tell me more about what you mean.
So like if you like a boy and then they go hang out with their friends and they're like, oh yeah, I don't really like her. I don't really like her. And then when they're with you, they really like you. Like don't change.
So don't have like multiple personalities. Have like your main personality that is the same when you're with your friends and also with the girl that you like or the boy that you like or whatever.
Yeah.
Basically be true to yourself.
Okay.
Well, you know what? I think I like that answer in this way. I mentioned to you a little bit earlier that there's this body of research by John Gottman. And if you really boil down all of what he suggests about how relationships work, he basically says the same thing. You got to be nice. Just got to be kind and you got to take care of your, you know, just take care of yourself so that you're assured of who you are, but also that you don't basically act like a jerk when you're with the people that you love. So,
yeah.
Well, listen, I am so glad that you made time to talk to me. I'm so glad that you emailed us and said, hey, can we chat? I'm sorry that Laura wasn't available because she would have had her own questions. Do you have anything else that is on your mind that would be helpful to your project, or that we can, you know, anything else that you wanted to ask me or just put out into the universe?
No, I think that's basically it. Thank you.
Right. Well, listen, I hope that you will let me know how your grade goes, and I trust that you'll put it together. If you have any extra questions in the meantime, between now and the time you finish your paper, let me know. I'm happy to send you answers over email or whatever. And otherwise, I'll just wish you the best and hope that the rest of your like high school career goes good. Are you get almost done with school this year?
Yeah, we end June 13th, and then the following week we have like finals and stuff like that.
Oh, so you go pretty late. You go like even into the 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go very late too. I don't think we're done till like the 26th or 27th. But well, listen, I hope that your finals go great and that you finish the school year good. And I will thanks for asking us for help, and thanks for helping me understand a little bit more of what it's like to be a relational person in ninth grade in 2024. Ninth grade?
Yeah.
Right on.
Thank you.
Okay, there you have it. That was me and Sophia talking about how relationships work, how they don't work. I got a little bit smarter about what it means to be a teenager in the dating relationship world right now. I hope you did too. There's one thing I wanted to revisit though. I was thinking about this since I finished the recording, but Sophia suggested at the top of our time that infidelity is often the cause of divorce, or infidelity is often the cause of when a relationship breaks down. And I think that is true. I think that is a thing that can happen. Obviously, infidelity is stressful and straining on the relationship, but I would want to make one caveat, which is, I think it's a little bit nuanced. It's not infidelity that's the end of a relationship. It's the inability to repair after infidelity that is the end of a relationship. Infidelity itself isn't the issue. It's whether or not a couple can find their way back, which requires a lot of trust building from both partners. It requires, you know, the partner who was involved to become trustworthy and to demonstrate that. It also is on the responsibility of the harmed partner to learn how to repair, to forgive, to accept the reality. So again, it's not strictly the infidelity that causes the end relationship. It's the inability to repair after that, or any betrayal, frankly. And so I just wouldn't want to kind of put all that in a single bucket. I hope that's a helpful reframe there, but I didn't want to just kind of leave it out there as a thing. I want to thank Sophia again for agreeing to come on the podcast. I think that takes a lot of courage. And Moxie, always impressed by young people who are trying to make the world a better place. So thank you again, Sophia. And yeah, thank you for listening. And thanks again for all the time and attention you put into making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.